Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I take what you made, but I got to put you down for a while. Well, you know I take what you made, but I got to put you down.
What's up, boxing fans, and welcome once more to Top Men Boxing Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of the Fight City. With me is James Foley of Bad Left Hook, a real mensch and not at all a nihilist. But James, you know, sometimes you eat the bar.
Oh, man.
Sometimes the bar, well, he eats you.
Dude, aren't you a sight for sore ears? Hearing that majestic baritone.
It's been a little bit, man. It's been a little bit, and I'm in a different part of the country now. Strange.
Man, it sounds like you finally have good reception. We might be able to understand what you say this episode.
Wow, that's a kind of a bonus. You know, on a
people will
podcast.
Get to hear your opinions for the first time.
Whew, I appreciate that. This is nice. This is nice. So, look, this is usually the part of the show right here where I say we have a lot of stuff to talk about today, but today we don't have a lot of stuff to talk about because high-profile boxing is coming, like, in a couple weeks. There was really only the HBO card from last weekend. That's it, pretty much.
Yeah.
There was some PBC shit. Come on, we don't watch that. We don't pay attention to that.
No. No. you want to give us an update on your personal situation or no?
Yeah, I don't care.
That type of...
No, I don't care. Dude, we're doing a short show, so we need some filler. For anybody wondering, I guess, on October 24th or something like that, a couple Sundays ago, I had gotten an offer, basically, to try out for a job, come do a working interview, and it was going to be a fairly significant raise in pay and benefits and all that type of stuff. And so I cruised up here, checked it out, liked it, and took the job. So I'm staying with a couple friends right now who are nice enough to let me stay with them just across the river from Portland, Oregon, in Vancouver, Washington. And I'm working in Portland. So I'm kind of just waiting on the housing situation to get my wife and daughter up here. So it's pretty crazy.
Nice. Well, congratulations, man. I'm glad to hear you got a better gig and you're back in the States again, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunately
just in time
also
for the next president, Donald Trump, to make this country great again. So.
Yeah, I'm rooting for Carly Fiorina to take us in the same direction as Dell or HP or whatever the fuck it was company that she ran into the ground.
She done a hell of a job.
She ran a nice, growing, burgeoning company right into the fucking ground. It was impressive, really impressive.
She would have a fine career as a boxing promoter.
Yes, she would. Or advisor, either or. Don't really know yet. So, all right, look, I've read The Follow Punch, and hey, diabetes and all that, man. It's crazy. It's a cool thing, though. But seriously, The Follow Punch, I mean, come on, folks. It's just not very good, folks. And because I read it one time, folks, and it was way folksy as fuck. It's not where ultimate champions are created, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Probably because that was harsh criticism, dude. I've been a big fan of the Kimster ever since he kind of inspired me to become a boxing writer. So it was kind of like having, just getting publicly bitch slapped by your own mentor. But to be honest, man, I'm just
too.
Like, any publicity is free publicity. So
that's true. But you invented the follow punch. I mean, for him
to
kind
of, I coined the term. I did.
Yeah.
regretted it since then.
You need to start talking to attorneys about trademarking and, I don't know. I'm just saying. Just saying, folks.
Yeah. But, the thing of it is, like, and if you're going to dish it out, you have to be willing to take it. So,
totally.
I've mocked Kim and his sidekick, Mr. Montoya, pretty often over the years.
Mr. Madison.
So that's fine, But there's no bad blood. I mean, it's all, it's that part of the fun of Twitter, I think, is, you know, trying to crap on other people's achievements and make a mockery of their, you know, day-to-day lives of complete strangers. So, and boxing, you know,
when you see them in person.
Of course. And, you know,
it's just part of it.
Yeah. Trying to remember how to breathe and how to pivot and stuff like that. It's important in those situations. But yeah,
well,
you know,
sometimes
I'm not the type of dude who would try to just show up to a fight and just start brawling with somebody. So it might be a little bit awkward,
gotta,
I guess. But
you got to ask yourself, what came first, the hot wetness or the wet hotness? And then when you find the answer, you'll be at peace.
I don't know, man. I got pretty turned on reading that poem, so I got to give the guy some credit.
Oh, I thought that was like a letter to Penthouse.
Not going to go there.
Or a letter to Ashley Madison. All right, let's get down to brass tacks. Let's get down to brass tacks and talk shop, as you like to say.
now you're subtweeting other people, you know?
No, I'm not, Jesus. Well, I didn't even know about that.
I'm going to mock everybody here.
Tim Bradley got down with Brandon Rios last weekend on HBO, and it yielded a pretty surprising result, I would say. Perhaps not the result in general, but in the ninth round, Bradley ended matters early with a series of body shots that decked Rios twice and had him taking the full count the second time. It was apparent early on, at least to me, and it seemed to the broadcast as well, that Rios, he had been hurt to the body, and he didn't like the body shots, but he was able to at least briefly come back and do his thing, which is basically applying relentless pressure, bullying opponents at his best. And it didn't last long, as I said. It was brief, but for a few rounds, there was at least the feeling that there might be some sort of danger for Bradley if he weren't careful. But once Bradley got his rhythm down, you know, he began settling into his jab, really became a firefighter out there, putting out fires, living in the heat, the flames, incendiary flammable material. Keep away from direct
heat.
Sorry, got carried away. Teddy Atlas really injected his special brand of inspiration into that one. But it was strange and wonderful and embarrassing all at once. What's the takeaway here? I mean, has Teddy turned Bradley into that smart monster he was talking about pre-fight, or was Rios just way closer to done than most of us realized?
Probably more of the latter, you know. I mean, I think Bradley looked really good. I mean, I think that, you know, it's just hard to say whether you know, Atlas has had, how much influence he's really had on him, because Bradley's one of those guys who've been a veteran, you know, professional for so long and had so many big fights. Guys like that tend to almost train themselves. Although he does seem to be more of a willing student in the way that he's talking about it. But, you know, like, it's hard to say, because, like, I thought Bradley looked pretty good in his last fight and his last couple fights. The only times that he didn't look good recently was, you know, getting sucked into the war against Provodnikov, and I guess the two fights with Pacquiao, he was just kind of outclassed. But, you know, like, it's maybe too early to say, but he looked good against Rios. I mean, Rios is an opponent that was, you know, there was potential that it was going to be that type of a fight that Bradley would just be able to kind of, you know, fairly easily outclass him and fight, you know, in a smart way and really rack up the points. I mean, it was surprising that he won the fight by stoppage. I think that probably does hint at the fact that Rios, you know, was a little bit worse for the wear than maybe we thought. But Rios has been one of those guys for the last couple of years. We've said, you know, God, he looks like he's so shot. He takes so much punishment in all these fights. And, you know, the interview after the Pacquiao fight, I mean, you could almost notice his voice not sounding great, you know, and just taking so many clean punches. But then a performance like the Alvarado thing, which in that the third fight, which I think now is obvious that was kind of just a mirage, that Alvarado literally was a guy who didn't train at all for that fight and was just standing there to just get the shit kicked out of him. And offered no, you know, so even a damaged, you know, lesser version of Rios was able to just completely, you know, annihilate him in three rounds. Well, that, I think, made us again, you know, think maybe Rios has a little bit more left in the tank. So it was something, you know, I was looking forward to, because both of these fighters for this era have been kind of significant in different ways. And Bradley obviously is better and has been on a little bit higher level. But, you know, Rios was a personal favorite and guy that I liked, you know, coming up as a lightweight and gave us a bunch of good action fights. So I wanted to see the best versions of the two guys going at it. But I don't think you can really say that that's what happened. You know, I think that Rios obviously was, on the downside of his career, which, officially is over, according to him. So, I mean, that was telling, you know, and just hearing that post-fight interview, and then you think about the struggle with the weight, and maybe there really was something to, you know, the fact that, like, he didn't get back in for another fight right away after the Alvarado fight. He took 9 months off or whatever, probably got out of shape, and maybe just didn't have the, you know,
he's
one of those guys, like, your reflexes and all that stuff, it's just going to get worse as you're getting older and you're taking a lot of punishment, and you combine that with the fact that he, you know, wasn't training, you know, to his best or whatever. Physically, I just think he was going to be, you know, severely compromised, and that's what happened. But you got to give Bradley some credit, because he showed up, he looked good, and he, you know, got the TKO, which was a surprising win. And I didn't think he really even faced much adversity, you know, in the fight. I mean, a couple moments that maybe hinted that it could get interesting, but it never really was. I thought it was fairly dominant, one-sided from the opening bell.
And, you know, you didn't mention it, but I just wanted to throw out the Vargas fight. I mean, there's been talk about Vargas and stuff like that, and I get it. You know, I mean, he came fairly close to finishing the fight in a fight that I didn't think he was all that close to winning, you know, in the very final round. But apart from that, Bradley looked pretty good. And unfortunately, that was the last round, so that was like the round that everybody walked away with the impression that, you know, Bradley maybe didn't do that well. I thought he did just fine apart from that, but... You know, anyway.
But he did great prior to that. But to be honest, dude, I completely spaced out about that fight. I was actually even thinking back to his fight with Chavez when I was saying I thought he looked good in that fight. But he looked good against Vargas, too, you know, and in general.
I mean, he had trouble, but he looked fine.
Yeah, he's obviously, like, a very good boxer. And, you know, the Provodnikov fight, you kind of have to, I think, view that on kind of an island, the fact that Bradley had put on so much weight and, you know, prior to the fight, and that was an issue, and that he was coming off the Pacquiao thing,
so
chip on his shoulder, yeah, and then he gets concussed in the very first round, which changes the entire rest of the fight. So, other than that, I mean, he's looked good, even in the two Pacquiao losses. You know, he had at least moments where he was holding his own against a guy who's really at the top of the sport. You know, so Bradley is a skilled guy. I mean, I've thought he's been a pound for pound guy for a couple of years. You know, right behind that very top crop of guys, but he's a smart fighter. He knows how to win, you know, and even if he's not like great at everything, he's good at you know, he's good in every area. I mean, the only downside has been that kind of defensive, you know, like those lapses, like at the end of the Vargas fight that have happened kind of more recently. But he's obviously a good fighter. So this was kind of the expected result, even if it wasn't a stoppage. I mean, I think when you added everything up, Bradley was the favorite, you know, rightfully so, going into this fight. I mean, I think a fight like Vargas versus Rios would have been, you know, a more even fight on paper. And even then, I think Vargas may have been the favorite, just based on youth and activity, you know, and everything. So. It's sad, man. It's sad, dude. I didn't expect that emotional like outburst from Rios after the fight. I mean, the guy was like on the verge of tears.
I was on the verge of tears. I mean, you know,
in tears.
It's like seeing like a Green Beret cry. It's like if that guy can cry, then I'm gonna fucking sob over here. You know, but I mean,
like a man crying at his father's funeral or something.
Yeah, like you know, the old. Only time it's okay for a guy to cry.
Yeah, the only time he's ever cried.
When his dad dies and when his dog dies, you know, it's like, fuck. But, it was rough. And I think that you kind of nailed it earlier with the, when you said that the stoppage result is basically the proof that Rios was, you know, just not in the best shape, not in the right state of mind, whatever you want to say. Because, I mean, when you just look at how the fight unfolded, in a lot of ways, early on, it was a pretty typical Rios fight. He tends to start a little slow, you know, not all the time, but he tends to start a little slow. He takes punches. He doesn't really move his head pretty much ever. Like, that's part of what makes him exciting and what made him, you know, start taking an ass-kicking against Acosta when he won the WBA or whatever belt it was at lightweight, and he wound up coming back by knockout. But, you know, that's kind of like a typical Brandon Rios fight. But then you could see in the corner, Garcia was like, okay, you know, now it's time to turn it on. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, he was basically like ridiculing him in the corner. Like, I think at one point he said, you're embarrassing everybody. Like, I mean, I don't know that that's the best way to motivate a fighter. Maybe it's the best way to motivate him. I don't know. But you could see that there was just, he was taking the punches. He wasn't really getting hurt. He just couldn't do anything. It was frustrating to watch. I like Brandon Rios. You know, I think he's kind of a knucklehead, but I like him. And yeah, I mean, and then it's tough to see him just say, dude, I couldn't do what I wanted to do in there. You know, I just couldn't do it. And now that means I have to retire. I respect his decision and I hope it is final because he really seems like he has kind of declined maybe for inactivity, but,
Rios Ortiz is viable again. I mean, now I think where they're at in their careers is a little bit closer than where it was before, you know?
What did you say? With what?
The Rios Ortiz super fight that I've been wanting for years finally makes more sense. I mean, you know, if either guy is ever going to fight again. It's tough, but it's kind of like you knew
you
that
love
would happen,
circus.
You know?
You love the circus shit, though, so that would be perfect
that's,
for you.
Right. That's my favorite thing in the sport. You know, it's tough, you know, and I think Lampley had some fair points where he was kind of saying, you know, I thought Rios would be one of the best lightweights in the world at one point. And, you know, I mean, he was one of the top contenders there before, you know, when Marquez was the lineal champion and Robert Guerrero was at 135 and he was one of the top-ranked guys, you know. Rios was really tough, good lightweight fighter who seemed to have a decent upside. But maybe, you know, you can't really say that he underachieved. I mean, he got... You know, he was in a real memorable, you know, fight of the year type of thing with Alvarado. He fought, you know, and that was a good win. He got the Pacquiao fight. So he's made some pretty good money. I guess it's just kind of sad that it seems like in retrospect it went by so quickly from the time of, like, you know, Rios the contender just kind of going into his prime. And now he's, like, he's basically, like, washed up or out of the sport.
My crackpot. Here, I'm going to just throw some crackpot shit out there right now. Blame Gamboa, that fucker, for pulling out of the – for doing the whole top rank thing when they were going to fight, because that shit was about to be pretty – I don't know. Maybe I'm, again,
I wonder what would happen.
I mean, I would have picked Rios personally, and if Rios would have been able to pull that fight out and it was exciting and stuff like that, I'm not saying that that would have just propelled him to superstardom and he would have been all over the map or whatever, but I think that would have made a big difference.
Well, yeah, I agreed, too, because I remember at the time that was part of my initial beef, just to pull out more writer feuds and stuff, with your boy Coppinger, who also had an interesting encounter with Rios over this past weekend. But I remember that Cop was – and I don't think Cop's a terrible dude. I don't really have any bad, you know, ill will towards him or anything like that. But I remember at the time that he was,
careful,
like,
he's
saying,
on my Christmas card list.
No, he's all right, but you know he was kind of like one of the big pet peeves was, and I had very recently started, you know, was on Twitter and finding, you know, seeing kind of like the internet boxing community, was that he was like kept calling Rios like a bum and almost like a punching bag, you know, like that type of language to describe the guy, which I just find like a little bit offensive toward any fighter calling them a bum. I mean, I get where you're coming from, but you know you don't need to like. Necessarily go there, and especially at the time where Rios was like still an undefeated prospect and like one of the top guys in his division. Yeah, he's not like a sick boxer, but he was a tough enough guy and a big enough puncher and had enough craft to be, you know, at one point number one or number two lightweight contender. And there was a time when a fight with Rios and Marquez people would have really gotten excited about.
Yeah,
And that would have been all action, you know. But so I just remember Cop was very very much like in the, you know, Gamboa is going to totally school Rios camp, you know. And at the time Gamboa was a featherweight, so it would have been he would have been jumping up, you know, whatever 9 pounds, and Rios obviously rehydrates a ton. So I mean, I think the size advantage would have been significant. But yeah, I was looking forward to how that would play out. And basically, based on Cop, would have probably been rooting for Rios just because I thought it was kind of silly to discount a guy. Like, yeah, Gamboa is really quick. But I don't know. It's an interesting fight to think back on, like what would have happened when you take Gamboa and Crawford into account. You know, and that was even a couple years later when I think Gamboa had arguably slowed down and lost a step. And I think Gamboa still gave Crawford a pretty tough fight. You know, and he was quick enough and strong enough to last for a while.
Yeah.
And obviously Rios doesn't have the skill or the movement that Crawford has. So I don't know. Maybe your boy Cop was right. Maybe, you know, Gamboa could
maybe
pick them apart. I don't know. But yeah, that was one of the made fights that fell apart that was really disappointing over the last few years.
Yeah, and it sounded like they were going to make it in Vegas. I was like, let's go. That sounds awesome. Let's do that shit. And then, bleh. I mean, you brought it up a little bit with Lampley, but, I mean, there was other talk during the HBO broadcast, which, in my opinion, reached somewhat impressive heights of ridiculousness at points, about Bradley moving up to face the winner of Miguel Cotto versus Canelo Alvarez. That's preposterous. I mean, I like Bradley. I have for a few years now, and I like Teddy Atlas a lot more than the average person, but it was one fight, and it was against a guy who we've already said has not looked good above 135 pounds, not once, and, you know, against Alvarado, but it was against a really shitty-looking Mike Alvarado, and I mean, declaring anything at this point is just kind of getting carried away, in my opinion, and this isn't the first time Bob Arum has apparently expressed interest in matching Cotto and Bradley. I just don't get why. Like, there are other fights at or around 147 pounds. I don't understand why, like, there's some need to push. His power's already been diminished from 140 to 147. I think that would be a problem against either of those fighters, but I don't know. Am I wrong here? Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, but, you know, I think there's no argument about it. The person we want to see the Cotto Canelo winner face is Gennady Golovkin, far and away, you know? So it's like, you know, I mean, if like 99.5% of me wants to see the winner fight Golovkin, maybe that other little half percent wouldn't be totally opposed to Tim Bradley just because, you know, the winner of that fight is obviously we're speculating on, but it doesn't seem like they're going to be in a huge rush to go and fight Golovkin, who obviously would be a favorite against either of those guys and is the toughest middleweight around. And still, maybe you could make a case that economically, you know, there isn't that viable to make the risk worth it for Cotto or Canelo. Canelo might want to do it on Pride. I think it would still be a big fight, but the way that the Golovkin, you know, Lemieux pay-per-view was kind of underwhelming pay-per-view numbers. I mean, there's no question he's a name in the sport. He's known. He's crossed over a little bit into some mainstream talk, but however many buys that it did, under 150,000, right? That's, you know, I think really halted the brakes on the kind of Golovkin's ready to be, you know, a superstar. When Canelo's doing 350 in his first pay-per-view and Cotto's done, you know, been in a couple that go over a million, obviously as the B-side, but also, you know, Cotto Margarito 2 did something like 600,000-700,000 buys. So he's not in that level yet. You know, Golovkin's not in that level yet. So I don't know. So then you start thinking, well, who's the other opponent? Well, who else is at, you know, 154, 160? Like, we don't want to see Canelo. We saw Cotto Gil. You know, we don't want to see Canelo fighting some other scrub middleweight guys that Golovkin already beat. So you just start thinking, like, who's
a division to do that?
No, and then there's nothing really at 154. I mean, there's a couple guys at 154, but, you know, like Andrade or whatever, and I don't know, you know. So when you start thinking, like, who's a viable pay-per-view guy? Well, here's Tim Bradley. You know, he's got a profile. The problem is he lost his two big fights to Pacquiao in most people's eyes.
You almost got me convinced.
No, but, you know, I mean, the thing about Bradley is, like,
I'm almost to that half percent.
I wouldn't be totally horrified by, like, Bradley Canelo doesn't, you know, actually, either way, I mean, I don't know. There would be some weird, like, intrigue in it for me. You know, I think Bradley would be an underdog against both guys, but I also see ways that he could be competitive with both guys. I do think the style he's been fighting lately would make him extremely vulnerable against the bigger guys, bigger punchers, and, you know, you may end up seeing him actually get hurt or stopped. But maybe not, you know. I mean, he would have advantages, I think, in terms of just boxing skill and speed, and in terms of, you know, with a guy like, I feel like Cotto's slowed down a lot at his age and is a little bit more methodical and would give Bradley chances to you know, he's not going to just be, it's not going to be like a relentless aggression where Bradley's not going to be able to compete with a bigger puncher. He'll have chances to kind of move around and move out of the way and defend himself and maybe, you know, box smartly, try to, so I don't know. You know, it's just like, other than Bradley or if Pacquiao was going to try to rematch Cotto, I mean, you're just thinking about what are the other options for those guys, assuming that they duck Golovkin, which would suck. And, you know, Bradley's one of those guys. I mean, in a pound-for-pound sense, he's one of the best fighters around the weight class. And if we talk about Mayweather going up to 154, Bradley's been a welterweight for a couple years. It's like, it's not ridiculous to think he could fight one of those guys at junior middleweight.
I'm not particularly interested in the fight. If we got it, I'd watch it. I'm not going to, boycott it or something, but I'll give him this much. If they were to make a fight like that, I think that Tim Bradley is probably one of the few guys that would be an underdog, but would go in there believing he could win. You know what I mean? That dude is the type of guy who believes in himself and believes he can win the fight, or at least he sure seems that way. So I would give him whatever chance that adds up to percentage-wise, but that is important, and that's not something that, should be overlooked, obviously. I really hope that whoever wins can get in with Golovkin, but really sound as though it's likely.
Well, the other problem with Bradley is it would be one thing if Canelo and Cotto had just been junior middleweights and they were just fighting at 154 and that was their weight class and whatever, and then it's like, oh, okay, they're going to fight a welterweight and Bradley's going to move up. But it's kind of because of the whole backdrop of Cotto getting the lineal championship from Martinez, and then Canelo's been fighting at a catchweight because it's like he doesn't feel like making 154, but he's not he doesn't want to go to middleweight for some reason. So all that bullshit considered, the fact that the winner will be the lineal champion, and then you would try to sell us Tim Bradley's going to challenge for the fucking lineal middleweight championship.
That's
That's absurd, because at best Bradley would ever have been the number two or number three welterweight, and it's like you weren't even the lineal champ in that, and now you're going to jump up two weight classes and fight for lineal championship when Golovkin's been the number one contender for 3 years. So yeah, that part of it is bullshit, but just as its own thing, I'm not totally against it. Part of it too is because Bradley would probably be losing badly to either guy, and you would see some crazy Teddy Atlas antics in the corner.
Against who?
Well, you see how fired up he was getting in this fight where nothing was even happening, and it was so unnecessary. And it almost felt totally forced. Atlas just knew he had to throw some fireworks in there. he just started screaming for no reason. But that would be something, man. I don't know. It'd be weird. But, yeah, where do you see Bradley going? I mean, the thing is, I'd rather see that than see the third fight with Pacquiao.
Well, I think that that's probably what they're going to push for. At least that would be my guess, because there's the built-in narrative. Manny's going to be the A-side, and he's going to be selling the majority of the pay-per-views in that one, needless to say. But he's also – I think that there's definitely been some luster knocked off in the last couple of years. Well, there has been, just measuring by pay-per-view numbers and stuff like that and attention, and then, the loss to Floyd Mayweather. I hate to say it, but that shit hurts. So I think that actually might make that fight more likely.
Well, how much is going to sell, though?
Well, I can't – but who else is Manny really going to go after? I don't really know who else he could go after, apart
Crawford?
From – Yeah, but I don't know how much that's going to sell either.
But at least it's new. Bradley's a fight we've already seen that most people think.
I like that fight. Don't get me wrong. I like that fight. I just mean that I don't
think
Manny going with Bradley again is really all that out of the question.
It could happen. I hope that it doesn't. But, in an ideal world, I'd love to see, I'm kind of pro Pacquiao Khan now as a fight. Just all the chatter on that. If there was any way that could possibly happen, I think that's the best option. Stylistically, it's an exciting fight, and Khan is just keeps chirping and chirping, and he's
Why can't he just shut up? If he could just shut up, he'll get a big fight. Shut up and beat somebody who's
Well, he's already
Julio
signed
Diaz
for the fight to fight Pacquiao. He's already signed. The fight's signed.
Yeah, it's done. It's sealed. It's delivered. It's been, written in goat's blood. But Bob Arum.
But I'd like to see some Bradley Crawford. I think that would be awesome.
That would be a fun fight.
I'm just trying to think. I'm still down for Bradley Provodnikov too. If Tim ever wants to get super crazy, you know, and have another near death experience, then that would be the way to go. But you know, but I also think that I just have wanted for so long to see Bradley fight. You know, it's clear. He came up short against Pacquiao. He got the great win against Marquez, you know, older version of Marquez, but he came up short against Pacquiao. You know, I just want to see him against those next guys at welterweight, the young guys who haven't really proven themselves, like Keith Thurman, Sean Porter. You know, you can throw Crawford into that category too, which obviously more makeable because it's, you know, the all top rank. But you know, I think that's the type of fight that I've really been wanting to see Tim Bradley in, you know, and to get, you know, give him a chance to, like, you know, take one of those guys' undefeated records and you know, and kind of, you know, affirm his status as the number two welterweight. Or, you know, he would be a great name for any of those fighters to have, because he is regarded so highly. And, he, you know, because he does, he beats fighters like Rios, like Chavez, like Jesse Vargas, you know. I think he's clearly that one level behind, you know, the Pacquiao's and Mayweather's.
Yeah, I would agree. He needs to, you know, prove he can get past that level or get to that level, I guess. You know, I thought that he was well on his way, but well, I don't know. I do have to say, though, I mean, as much as I wanted to joke about Rios retiring, you know, after the... I can't joke about it. I mean, there's no joke there, really, especially given, you know, like the... I don't know, the somberness, the mood of the seriousness of boxing in general. But it's like, I cannot help but think of him totally flashing on Freddie Roach a couple years ago with Margarito, and then now coming to a point where he's like, I need to quit this. I don't know. I mean,
No, dude. The Margarito was just saying that Roach was a scaredy cat.
Yeah. You know what, though? At least Rios had the balls to be just like, dude, that was a dumb joke. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't hold that against him. You know, I mean, I think you saw, like...
At first, I was like, that's really dicked. But then he was like, I'm sorry, dumb joke. All right, well, what are you going to do? But, you know...
Well, I thought he was a really endearing character, man, when you saw him in the 24-7 stuff before the Pacquiao fight, you know? And you saw in the ring on Saturday. I mean, the guy, like... you know, the guy obviously has a heart. I mean, who would have thought in the great rivalry and feud between Victor Ortiz and Brandon Rios that, you know, if you were going to say that one of them was going to have basically crying in the ring post-fight, that it would be Rios. Because I don't think Ortiz broke tears in his famous, you know, meltdown of,
no,
I don't deserve to be getting my ass kicked like this. He wasn't crying. So
he just kept his psychotic, like, stoner surfer face. Just, you know, like showing his teeth all smiling. I don't think I deserve to get beat up like this. You know.
They got to make that happen, I think. I mean, you got to get Rios and Ortiz out there for one more payday.
And sadly, however that ended inside of the ring, it's almost guaranteed to be really exciting.
Yeah, of course. I mean, because I think that there's genuine, like, really bad blood where they hate each other from almost childhood, you know? So it's just such a no-brainer. And the thing of it is, like, for a while, it was like both guys were a little bit too much of commodities in their own way that you would never make that fight because Rios was top rank and Ortiz was golden boy. And then Ortiz just gets, you know, completely falls apart as a fighter, almost doesn't really even belong in the sport, probably never should box again, you know, because... and Rios was still more viable, but yeah, the Chesney incident. But now, you know, now they're both just kind of like, neither one's really relevant in boxing, but you put them against each other, that's a great fight. I mean, fuck, I'm down. HBO, give them, you know, $1 million each if that's what it takes. Because I'd love to see that. That would be a high-end, you know.
Loser leaves boxing forever, cannot come back, I'd be all for it. Well, no, I don't know. I might have to go back on that one.
Winner fights Amir Khan after Pacquiao knocks him out.
Yeah, there you go. After Julio Diaz knocks them both out. So, yeah. So let's move on to the co-feature before we skedaddle out of here. in that HBO co-feature, Ukrainian two-time Olympic gold medalist Vasyl Lomachenko completely outclassed and stopped Romulo Kosica, right? That's how they said it? Yeah. In 10 rounds.
That's the pronunciation I've heard since I've been following his amateur career.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. I ran into him when we were both 12, but maybe the most was the HBO crew talking about Kosica's ethnic makeup, incidentally, Japanese and Mexican. So that, you know, wedges right into our conversation here. It's a mix you don't see every day anyway, but beyond that, Kosica was just tough. That's about it. Lomachenko is clearly supremely talented. Personally, I'm most impressed by his feet. I think that's what really sets him apart from the other fighters with fast, accurate hands, like Gary Russell Jr., for instance. But I know he's only a handful of fights in, so I get that, but the opponents need to be better than that. The list of opposition is limited, I know, but it wasn't a competitive fight going in, coming out. Where do you stand on this Ukrainian dreamboat, Foley?
Well, I like him as a fighter, but I agree that, you know, that's getting a little bit ridiculous, and I'm tired of HBO trying to, like, sell us on a bunch of bullshit that's just, like, not true, you know, like, and I was kind of, like, half tuning in, half tuning out, you know, like, the fights like this are just not compelling to me. I'm not going to sit there and watch 10 rounds, you know, where one guy is clearly much more skilled and on another level, and you just have this kind of, like, gritty, you know, hapless challenger doing his best, but you know that it's not going to amount to anything. So it's like right off the bat, I was irked when Kellerman started trying to basically say that, like, Romulo is, like, the, you know, the best available contender, or the best, you know, Lomachenko will fight anyone, and this was the best guy for him, you know, whatever. And the guy's like an alphabet, you know, mandatory or something, but I've never heard of him before. I mean, it's like, I can probably name 10 fighters in that weight class. More than that,
yeah,
but, you know, I mean, I can name 10
and
top
fighters,
guys there that would be better fights for Romulo.
And fighters
better
they would have to cross the aisle for.
Right, and you just pretend like Rigondo doesn't exist. Like, he wouldn't take the fight. I mean, you couldn't, I don't know. There's just a lot of, you know, there's that's like one of the best weight classes in the sport in terms of just how many young, talented guys there are.
It's star building. You know, it's not fight making, it's star building, and that's what's fucked up.
Yeah, so I don't like that, you know. I mean, obviously, like, he's had a couple of interesting fights. I mean, Gary Russell Jr., Orlando Salido, both great fights. But, you know, once you kind of establish yourself on that level, and beating Russell did that, there should be some standard for, and it's like, it's okay, like, okay, one shitty fight, it's fine, you know. But it's been kind of a while since we've seen, you know, we just want to see him in those fights. You know, they rumored, like, Nicholas Walters for a while, and there were maybe some weight issues with it. Walter's a little bit bigger, but, like, yeah, I mean, there are enough guys that I'm sure something better could have been done. And again, it's kind of like the Kovalev, the Golovkin model. We're gonna have to see all these, like, mismatches, and then it'll try to build up toward, like, one big thing, where it doesn't really make sense. But
which now that they're doing with Kovalev and fucking Andre Ward, where it's like three fights down the line, they'll fight each other. Yeah. So now it's not just Al Haymon pulling this type of stuff. Unfortunately, this has kind of become the model on both sides, which is disappointing. I mean, I also kind of understand it was a chain reaction, but it's fans don't care how it happened or whatever. It's just, it's happening, and it's fucked up.
Yeah, and there's a couple things. You know, it's like Walters was just on HBO. Rigondeau was on HBO before. They didn't want him back on HBO or something. I mean, I don't know, I'm not sure, but the guy's a professional fighter. Went to Japan last year to fight some guy. I'm sure he would fight Lomachenko on HBO. You know, I mean, he went and fought Donair on HBO, and it's one of the best wins of any guy on the kind of the top of the sport in the last few years. And then he just gets shunned. So it's like, I don't care that much. I mean, I like Rigondeaux. I don't hate him like some people do. But those are the type of fights that, like, have to happen. You know, you have two guys who are, like, two of the most talented fighters, two of the best amateurs of all time. They're right in the same weight class. And then you're giving me you know, what was this guy's name?
Romulo Kosica.
Romulo Kosica.
Yeah.
And then Max Kellerman's telling us that that's the best available fighter, that we should be praising Lomachenko for taking, you know, always taking on the toughest opposition. You know, it's just ridiculous, man. And like, that's the thing is, I'm getting to the point where like, I no longer appreciate. At least with Golovkin and Kovalev, I mean, they destroy their challengers, the guys who were huge mismatches. Lomachenko now has become, you know, maybe doesn't have that type of power. He's more of a boxer. You're seeing a lot of skill, but it's just less interesting to watch a guy like that. And I'm not going to watch it if it's a 15-20-1 mismatch. No, go ahead.
But even he was like, I think it was yesterday, I read an interview where he was like, oh, I could have taken him out any time. I was just having fun in there. I'm like, dude, that's not, no. You don't,
not fun
what
for
the
us.
Fuck? Yeah, no, we don't want to see you against some dude we've never seen before for 10 rounds. Like, if you could have taken him out a lot earlier, I don't even know if that's the case, because he looked like he'd been trying to finish him for a few rounds and he just doesn't have much power. But even so, don't say that. That just makes you look dumb now. So, and I like the guy. You know, there's no excuse for not pulling off Lomachenko, Rigondo, or, I don't know, whatever, a bigger fight.
Or Salido rematch, or fucking Gary Russell rematch at some point, you know? I don't know. I mean, again, like, there's some fracture in the sports. There's some PBC guys like Frampton and Quigg and whoever wins that fight. You know, there might be some other stuff
great,
that just politically can't be made, but... Yeah, that should get all the UK fans... Man, it's too bad Shep got fired from that podcast, because he probably would have done, you know, great analysis on that.
Well, dude, you know, you dance with Michelle Joy Phelps, you get burned.
That's true.
That's not even
true.
A real thing.
I can't believe that guy. Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, I mean, I would have vouched for Shep. I was shocked at his sexism, and you know, it was a dark day for all of us.
Yeah, it was another black eye for boxing, is what it was. Black eye for boxing. Poor Shep.
For associating ourselves with a knave like him, having him, you know, be a guest at one point.
A filthy cur, so, really.
Never again.
Nope. I think his days on Top Men are done.
Absolutely.
Trying to keep a straight face here. I mean, so we're both in agreement as far as Lomachenko. We're kind of bored. Like, it's just, yeah, there's not really any good arguments for making these kinds of fights. So, I don't know. I'm pretty set. I want to see Lomachenko Rigondo. The amount of skill, the amount of, like, twitchy fucking anticipation in that ring that night. I mean, a lot of people don't really like those kinds of fights, and I understand that, but... I don't know. I would love that shit.
It's going to be awesome. I mean, it's a chess match, you know, but that's the thing is, I don't know, like the best part of boxing for me is like that intrigue of when you have those evenly matched fights, seeing, you know, like
course.
How is this going to play out? Like it doesn't necessarily matter. And that's why Rigondeaux Donaire I thought was consistently entertaining, you know, from beginning to end, even though it didn't have that much action, you know, but it did have that kind of like, oh my God, you know, like that factor of the unexpected and not knowing what was going, you know, and then realizing like Rigondeaux was dominating him and Donaire just getting deeper and deeper into the hole. You know, it's like, 50-50 fights offer that, where you can have these things, you know, where you get that anticipation. You don't really know exactly which way it's going to go. And a fight like, yeah, it would be great, because I think, you know, I thought Lomachenko and Gary Russell Jr. was great. You know, I mean, those type of fights, it's like, yeah, they're not like consistent barn burners, you know, end-to-end, you know, bell-to-bell action bloodbaths, but they have, you know, it's like, you see just the skill level in the chess match at kind of that highest level of boxing, and watching, you know, kind of one guy get those slight advantages and, or, you know, or take over or whatever. It's like, that can be really exciting too.
At the end of the day, I want a competitive fight pretty much no matter how it comes, but obviously I would prefer
same
fucking
dude.
Fucking
I'll watch Miguel Vasquez, Richard Abreu with you right now.
I mean, I would prefer...
It's a 50-50
you know,
fight.
Yeah, I
yeah,
want
no,
to
maybe there,
shot,
there's,
but...
there might be some simple exceptions to that rule, you know, like if you're talking about guys like that.
Yeah, every so often, you know, just a good nasty beatdown. But, yeah, no, we want competitive fights overall. There's no question. So, yeah, I mean, pretty much any competitive fights that should be happening or could be happening, I'm all for the most part.
Yeah, well, the whole thing about boxing is all these hypothetical, like who would beat who and what would happen if this guy fought this guy, you know, and that's such a big part of the sport, because anything, you know, in theory, like, you can make any of these fights. You know, there's no schedule. There's nothing where it's like you have to do that. You know, you could kind of do whatever you want. So, and eventually those big fights with big enough demand get made. But
exactly.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I've gotten more disillusioned over the last couple of years because there's just been such a stream of mismatches, and I hate the way that this trend of kind of like the top fighter, you get one easy fight, okay, then you can get one big fight, and it's like that's your whole year. You fought twice. One fight was like a 17-1 underdog, and the other fight was like a 7-1 underdog. You know, I mean, that's just, I don't like the inactivity, and you're following guys' career and you're hoping for big, big things. And then it's kind of like, what does that even mean? You know, I mean, Golovkin, it's all been awesome to watch him fight, but we know that there are these great matchup, you know, like, I mean, I was advocating that Andre Ward thing and it's never going to happen. And that to me was like boxing at its best, you know, two of the generation top talents fighting each other in their prime. And now instead, and Ward Kovalev is going to be great. But instead, with Golovkin, who I think probably the most, in my opinion, like the best fighter of those three. I mean, with Ward, it's debatable. But I mean, I'm just such a big buyer on Golovkin and wanted to see him do those, you know, amazing things to really be great in the sport. And now we're just going to kind of, you know, keep our fingers crossed and hope that he gets a mega fight with Canelo next year.
Well,
you know, Canelo's already got shut out by Mayweather. I mean, what does that mean to beat Canelo? I mean, I know that Canelo's good, but it's not the same as like if he went up and beat Andre Ward from a legacy point of view.
Well, I don't know about you, but personally, I'd rather just be a fan of a fighter and go ha 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 when I'm right and fights don't get made. So, but that's just me. I'd rather just root for one guy and then hate the other, and then when I'm right, go at everybody. It's my favorite thing.
Well, I mean, I get that too, but yeah, it's frustrating to see the
Want competitive fights. We want boxing at its best. Big fights. Good stuff.
Yeah, well, I think there's something to be said. And, I mean, I've always thought about doing a deeper analysis on this, but then just got too lazy to ever actually do it. But the notion of that, like, these huge paydays, I mean, it's kind of an obvious concept, but these huge paydays that these guys have been getting from the networks have basically, like, caused them to stop taking risk in the matchmaking, you know, because all
exactly.
of a sudden, like, you're getting paid this amount to fight this guy who poses, like, you know, no, like 5% chance to beat you. How much is it worth to fight a guy who maybe has like a 60% chance to beat you? And the whole thing of when taking a loss, how it can be so, you know, perceived as so devastating to one's career. I mean, all these undefeated prospects are built up on the idea that, like, they've never lost. They could be great, you know? But it's really frustrating, man, because, you know, you see all these fights, and then this whole year has just been bad because even the 50-50 fights have disappointed. I mean, I'm really hoping that Canelo and Cotto fucking, you know, hits the mark because, I mean, it just seems like every fight that I've looked forward to has been disappointing this year.
Yeah, 2015 has not been a banner year for boxing. That's a pretty light way of putting it. Yeah, if Cotto Canelo doesn't come through, we're going to have a problem. We're going to have a pretty big problem. But, well, whatever. It'll be boxing, basically. But it'll be a problem in the sense that 2015 was just a total fucking waste.
Like, we made all the great good fights, but they all sucked.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and sometimes that happens. You know, and it's not like boxing is going to disappear because of that. But it doesn't help. It sure doesn't help. And it sucks, you know, to have... to be doing a podcast week after week in a year that fucking sucks. We could just be off smoking weed, doing something else, browsing the internet, looking at memes, you know, scrolling down James Bagg Jr.'s fucking Twitter page, all sorts of things. So
checking out Michelle Joy Phelps' Instagram page.
As a journalist, but respecting her as a journalist.
No,
as we
I'm
do
just
it.
Leering.
Oh, okay. I can dig that too.
Well, I mean, not saying I don't respect her as a journalist, but I also, you know, am a fan of her other activities.
Dude, don't go the way of Shep. Don't go the way of Shep.
Can't pull a Shep. I will not pull a Shep. But I'm just saying, I was just like, okay, she's a beautiful woman who posts pictures of herself and, you know, scantily clad and whatever. Like, so what? That's great. You know, I'm for that, Shep. Like, what is your What is your issue?
Yeah, well, I don't know why anybody would be, you know, actively trying to stop that activity personally, but whatever, you know. But I kind of understand where he's coming from because I used to think that way, and then
You used to be a misogynist, like him.
Basically, but no, seriously, like in this. Whatever, but as soon as I had a daughter, dude, I had to start thinking about a whole lot of things a lot of different ways. And once I started realizing, you know, I don't want to get off philosophical, but seriously, I started realizing how women are treated and just in general, and then especially in a field like boxing, it was just, damn, dude, well, I better fucking, you know, fight past the cognitive dissonance and get to a better place on this, because my daughter's going to be facing that same shit in a couple of years. So, yeah, that's pretty much all it is.
No, that's dope, dude. I mean, I'm kind of with you on that. You know, I mean, I kind of understood what his point was that he was trying to like get at and whatever. But at the same time, I mean, there is a lot of that like objectification of women and seeing them as kind of like, you know, and I think there was an element of like almost like slut shaming involved there, where it was like, oh, you posted a picture of yourself in a bikini, so, you know, how can we take you seriously? And
yeah,
it's like,
therefore you're not a person
I can separate
like everybody else.
Two in my mind, you know, so to say like, you know, like if you could find someone attractive or someone can celebrate their body or whatever, and yet they can still also have, you know, other value, as doesn't mean that like they're not good at their job or that you can't take them seriously or whatever. I think that was the main point of contention. But that said, I mean, I get where he's come, because I've made fun of her before in the past for things like when Mayweather Pacquiao got made, and, you know, basically like claiming credit for scooping that when every other reporter scooped that months before, you know, like that type of thing, where I think there's legitimate criticism of a lot of the internet type of reporters. Right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's not anything. It's the same thing. We kind of make fun of Ellie Secback or a lot of people in the business who do that kind of virtual reporting, or whatever, you know, the kind of like, you know, here's, you know, my camera and what those type of interviews. There's a lot of that weird competitive, like, oh, I'm breaking this story, and you know, all of a sudden, but really it was like a press release that like 200 people got.
Yeah. I mean, that's unfortunately kind of what boxing media has come to, a lot of boxing media, not all, has come to. But I mean, hey man, we got guys like Brian Campbell, BC, keeping the dream alive, putting out some real shit. BC's our boy. Rafe Bartholomew, and that's, man, I was bummed to see that Grant Land got taken down, but, you know, these guys are the type of guys that are going to find homes.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you're right, but it did suck, because, you know, then they, as far as boxing, I mean, I think they had a lot of really good boxing writing.
Yeah.
Better than, you know, maybe any other site in terms of just on a pound-for-pound level.
For sure.
But, yeah, that was tough to see. Well, especially you know, the ropes being up in the air, not really sure what's going to go on with that. Our boy Campbell's probably on a ledge right now somewhere, but cuz that was really his, you know.
Well, if he is, I will lay my beard down as a cushion when he jumps off that ledge, because I will not let that happen.
Yeah, no, dude, I'll go up there and jump in his place if that's what
I'll start a GoFundMe for that dude right now.
But hopefully they come back in some kind of, you know, incarnation or something down the road. If who knows,
for sure.
You know, maybe some of the stuff will stay at ESPN. I don't guess, maybe that's not been resolved yet, but that was a huge show. So I hope they can come back, man. I really did like their interview. Agreed. I mean, I think as far as like a podcast that has boxers and, you know, like trainers on as kind of regular guests, I mean, they really did get some great material from those guys.
No,
like,
for
you
sure.
know, the
they
Angel
really
Garcia
podcast.
Interview, and Tim Bradley was huge on there.
Yeah, I had him in my iTunes podcast, for sure. It was a good show. So
yeah, I mean, it was second only to Leave It in the Ring as far as my favorite boxing podcast.
Yeah, I put that one up there. That's
What's the one with Steve Kim and Mario Lopez? That's my number one.
I don't know, but that's also in my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, it's in my Mount Rushmore of boxing podcasts.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, I told everybody we were going to keep it pretty short today. I think we exhausted almost our hour. But anyway, we'll be back next week, Foley and I, and Arispina and I will probably be doing something tomorrow. I think we'll be trying to resurrect that tomorrow as well. But
trying to
salvage
whatever little is left of the show's dignity after this fiasco.
Yeah, today was a little bit of a wreck, but oh well.
Sorry.
So
no, I didn't think so, but I don't. Who knows?
I thought it was funny. We were just dickheads. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, but it'll be funny, so nobody cares.
Because I'll come in next time and just throw a bunch of motherfuckers under the bus. You know, I just wasn't ready for it. But
well, I know. We're just going off the cuff. Just wait until we're actually prepared and have our fucking assassin list with us. So, in other words, stay tuned for that shit. And in the meantime, tell all the people who quote philosophers. Wow, tell all the people who can't even say the word philosopher that we're a good show, Top Men Boxing Radio, if you enjoy listening to us. And if you're on Twitter, follow James Foley at jfoley81 and dig his stuff at Bad Left Hook. And follow me, Patrick Connor, on Twitter at Patrick M. Connor, and visit thefightcity.com for my stuff. Finally, I swear, like the Top Men Boxing Radio page on Facebook and rate the show on iTunes, please. Foley, this is how we say goodbye in Germany.
Nice, dude. Thank you. Man, dude, we're going to have to at some point get in person and watch just watch every Indiana Jones flick.
I'm down, dude. We can definitely do binge watch some Indiana. Not the last one, though. Can we skip
the last
one?
Crystal Skulls?
Yeah, kind of. I don't know if I'd have to do
a big Shia LaBeouf guy.
Watch the Crystal Skull.
Well, we'll do a massive amount of drugs for that.
Well, that goes without saying.
I'm just
going
to basically look up what is the, like, you know, the like basically like how much acid can you do without dying? And I'm going to do that plus one and just strap in.
I'll do some. I'll bring the White Russians, you know, the Creedence. We'll get it going.
Mind if I do a J?
You know, dude, it's the 8th already. I got my venue.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. Far out.
Far out. All right, everybody. Easy, and we'll see you next week. Foley, you're beautiful.
All right, man. Later.
Later.